Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You're listening to Following On here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, along with former England fast bowler Steve Harmison, as always. So the dust has settled on England's 4-1 series defeat in India. Or has it? Is it still swirling? We'll hear the thoughts of head coach Brendan McCullum, who suggested that they do need to adjust as a team going forward. We'll also look ahead to the start of the English summer with Wisden Almanac editor Lawrence Booth and debate how Bazball evolves going forward. TalkSport's cricket editor John Norman is also set to join us to reflect on New Zealand's disappointing 2-0 series defeat to Australia. And we'll hear from Black Caps batter Daryl Mitchell. We'll also hear exclusively from England internationals Chris Wokes and Tammy Beaumont as several counties bid to host a professional women's side from 2025. And as always, we'll bring you the final word. So there really is plenty to get on with this week. This is Following On. The wounds have been licked, and I suppose the series defeat, will continue to be picked over Harmy. We'll hear in a moment from Brendan McCullum and Ben Stokes. But do you think that there were enough opportunities missed to say that England didn't take their chances, or were India really 4-1 better than England?
I think India were 4-1 better than England, but I think both. In that question, I think both answers, I think you could say England were possibly guilty of. If England had took their chances, would 4-1 been the end result? Possibly not, because there was times, especially in that, I think there was the third and the fourth test match, where you believed, you know what, if England do play a little bit smarter here, they can put pressure back on India. I think what India were very good at, and I've seen the video of Rahul Dravid's speech in the dressing room at the end, is when India got in front, they were ruthless. And I'm not sure you could say that about England. And I think that's where I think McCullum and Stokes really need to look at the game plans going forward. You know, if anybody thinks that this Bazball, for want of a better word, it needs to be readdressed, ripped up, started again, is nonsense. You know, this is the best mentality, this is the best look, and this is the best way we should be playing our cricket and going forward. I just think at times, during the Ashes, it has, I think, some of the wording and some of the rhetoric that's been talked about has, I think, hampered some of the mindset of the players. The one thing I will say is, do they have to have a look at personnel going forward? Keep the game plan, but boy, they might have to start making some tough calls on players going forward. Yes, there has been an element of class as a cozy club. I don't buy that. What I buy is the fact that they're giving people a chance to express themselves the best way and giving them a chance to make mistakes. But we're nearly 2 years in now, and I think some players are making the mistakes more often than they're not. And I think they've made it far too many times for my liking for me to think, well, they're using the Bazball as a crutch to say, oh, well, that's just the way we play. That needs to be readdressed. That needs to be readdressed big time and quickly, because the way that we outlook that we've got of the game, the positive mentality that we think about the game, our forceful way we try and push onto the opposition, I think is brilliant. I just think in times, I think we have to look. We're 100-1. You know, Joe Root reversing it. You know, Ashes, when Nathan Lyon walks off at 180-1, down to 10 men. Now Ashwin misses 2 days of a game. All these things are keep coming back and back and back. And I think because of that, I think that's why England were in the position they were in. They did make silly mistakes. They did give chances away when they were in the ascendancy. And the one thing that India did, they didn't give England a sniff when India were ahead, apart from the first test. And that's why I think it ended at 4-1.
But let's hear from Brendan McCullum first then, Harmy.
Obviously disappointed. You know, we came here with high hopes and felt that we had really progressed as a team. And on this occasion, we've got to acknowledge that we've got a bit of work to do moving forward. And I think as long as we're prepared to put our hands up and say that we need to adjust some of those things, never throw away what we've done to this point, because you know that's the conviction and the methods that we've got, but you need to also keep improving.
You mentioned adjustments there. What type of adjustments, and how do you see this team evolving going into the summer?
Yeah, look, I'm not going to project too far forward. Obviously, we've all got some thinking to do. I think the method that we try and operate within the environment is something that the guys enjoy. The way that the skipper and I have a very clear vision of where we want to get this team to, we've just got to make sure that during the next couple of months, when there's some time for self-reflection amongst the playing group, but also you know amongst myself and the skipper too, about what we need moving forward, it will give us our best opportunity. But look, you know, we do have to put our hand up and say that it hasn't been the tour that we wanted it to be, but at the same stage, I do believe there's some positives to glean from it.
Reading between the lines, I think what McCullum is saying there, I think he's saying, you know, we are potentially making the same mistakes, and that worries me a little bit going forward, you know, 18 months out from an Ashes series, especially when Ben and Brendan have put so much faith, and a lot, to be fair, all their eggs in one basket with about 14 men. And I think what the Mabbies just realised in this tour, under pressure, are these the ones that are going forward? Do we might have to make a little bit of a tweak and a change? Watch this space.
Well, yeah. Look, one man who wasn't taking any backward steps, or in fact even sideways steps, was Ben Stokes. He admitted that his team were outplayed, but well, let's hear what he said. He was speaking to Cameron Ponsonby.
For us, this series isn't going to and shouldn't affect anything that we've managed to achieve before this tour. You know, it's the first time, you know, in particular these last four games, where this team's been, you know, dominated pretty much the whole time throughout a series. But look, we will use this as inspiration to become a better team. We will use this as inspiration to become better players. And that's the mentality that we have. You know, this media name Bazball, is everyone is saying, what is it? My opinion, it's a mentality of always wanting to get better. So, you know, in the face of defeat and failure, Bazball will hopefully inspire people to become better players and inspire this team to become even better than what we are.
There you go. Still very much a Baz baller, although he does use the word with a sneer. He doesn't obviously enjoy the term, but he uses it because everybody else does. And he said that he hopes it will continue to inspire people, but they've lost 7 out of the last 12 test matches, and that's not inspirational to anybody.
No, it's not inspirational to anybody, but the way that you are asked to play, you know, the freedom that you're given to express yourself, the way that you are treated as adults and from a human point of view when you're going into the dressing room, the onus is on you to, you know, to be the best player if you possibly can be. It's your career, so you enjoy being the you know, the best version of yourself coming into an environment which is everything's given to you going into it. And we're giving you the best chance possibly to play with freedom, take the opposition on. And one or two, I think, are falling short of that. And I think one or two are using this is just the way we play. I think they're taking that too far now as a little bit of a crutch. And I think Ben's possibly realised that, you know, this team, I hope he's realised that, you know, this team has to be tougher. This team has to be smarter. And this team has to identify situations where, under pressure, we could play better. Not more defensive. Not, and if it means going harder, go harder. but play the situation a lot better, which I think he does as a, as an individual. And I think over the course of this time he's been in charge, hopefully he's identified that when times are good in England, you know, when things are going well for us, but sometimes you learn a hell of a lot when you get beat. You hell of a lot about individuals when you get beat. And I hope that McCullum and Stokes have learned a lot about the makeup of the group he's got. And if it is the same group going forward, yeah, so be it. Hopefully they've learned. But if it's not, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, I'm paraphrasing, but you basically said on a show at the beginning of January that England will go to India, they'll lose 4-1, and then they'll come back and beat West Indies and Sri Lanka 3-0, 3-0. They'll win 6 out of 6, and suddenly it won't matter in India. So we'll come on to that point. That's basically what you said at the beginning of January. We'll do that in the
probably
next
will.
Section. We'll do that in the next section. You're listening to Following On here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, along with former England fast bowler Steve Homerson. And a reminder, you can now also watch us on YouTube. If you so desire, just head over to the TalkSport Cricket YouTube channel and subscribe. Right, before we have a chat to Lawrence Booth, as promised at the top of the programme, let's hear a little bit more from England's Test coach, Brendan McCullum.
We can all acknowledge that there is a big series in a couple of years' time, but respectfully, we'll certainly be putting our attention on what's in front of us. And obviously for us, that's West Indies to start the summer, then Sri Lanka. And then we obviously roll on to Pakistan, New Zealand, India at home, and then Ashes away. So there's enough there for us to be able to suggest that there's some time to be able to get some cricket into some people that we think are going to give us our most amount of options in those big series. So look, you know, we've got it's a fine balance, but you know, we'll still be looking to ensure that we pick the best team that we possibly can in any given situation, whilst also looking to try and get some cricket into them.
Could you shed some light on the wicket-keeping situation? Obviously, Johnny Bairstow was the wicket-keeper at home. Folks has come in, kept very well, as in kind of the specialist subcontinent conditions. Does Bairstow remain the man in possession for the summer, or was it a case that Folks was told this could be yours to continue with?
Look, we haven't had any of those conversations yet. I think we've got a couple of months to sort of work things out. I think Folks has kept brilliantly here in India, and obviously, you know, Johnny had a decent series with the bat and the Ashes as well. So, you know, there's good options, and we just got to make sure that, from our point of view, we make the decision which we feel gives us the most amount of weaponry to be able to ensure that we're able to go toe to toe with the best teams in the world. And I thought Folks did a good job with the gloves, and Johnny's obviously had 100 tests under his belt as well, and we'll work out things down the line.
Plenty of decisions for Brendan McCullum and the management team, I suppose, to make. Lawrence Booth, well-known, long-standing now, I can say, Wisden Almanac editor and writer for The Mail, joins us. Lawrence, there is so much to discuss with you and so many questions to ask. I'm going to let Harmy do most of them, but I'll start with the obvious one. As the co-author, along with Nick Holt, of a brilliant book about baseball and about its culture and how it's changed Test cricket, or how it did in its first 18 months. Have you been the subject of a few snarky comments from people saying, huh, what have you got to say for yourself now?
Yeah, just a few, especially as the series progressed, and especially from Indian fans, funnily enough, who I think there was this sort of slight misconception that because we'd written a book on baseball, we expected England to win every Test match, that they'd somehow cracked cricket and found a fail-safe method. I mean, the argument that we put forward in the book really was that it had freed them up. Brendan McCullum and Ben Stokes had freed up the players to play a more aggressive, entertaining brand of cricket, which was giving them a better chance of victory. I mean, I think the concern always going to India was that the gap in class would be too great for even a kind of positive mental attitude to overcome. You know, we had the near miracle of England's win in the first Test at Hyderabad, and everyone said, here we go, this is baseball in excelsis, if you like, this is what it's all about. And then England got themselves into positions in each of the next four games, actually, but they weren't good enough to capitalise. India were too good to let them capitalise. That doesn't mean baseball's dead or they're going to stop playing baseball. It just means that they came up against opposition who were too good for them, no matter what approach they took.
In Lawrence, in a couple of years, are you going to be following up with this book with a second edition with smarter baseball, or you know, the more refined version of England going forward? Because I think that's what England need to do over the next, you know, few months, few weeks, and leading into the Ashes in a couple of years. And there's some decisions to be made. When you wrote that book, did you foresee some of the mistakes that all were made on that Indian tour being made by the same people at the same time under the same pressure?
It's tricky. I mean, there were signs against Australia, weren't there? Especially in the second test at Lord's, when there was that half hour, 45 minutes of hook happy dismissals, and people really first started to question the approach. You know, were they that was this lack of responsibility that some have sensed around the Baz-ball ethos? Was that coming home to roost? I spoke to you, didn't I, before the Headingley test, and you said England could still win 3-2, and you came quite close to it, actually. What happened in India was they, because India, the gap was so big between the two teams, England felt obliged at times to be overly aggressive. They tried to cash. I mean, Joe Root's little reverse ramp at Raj Kot was the classic, wasn't it? Where everyone said that was the moment it cost England. But that shot had given him lots of runs for almost no dismissals previously in his Baz-ball career. He was averaging more as a Baz-ball batsman with a strike rate that was 20 higher. You know, people tend to zoom in on the isolated moments that don't work rather than look at the bigger picture. But to go back to your question, there are decisions to be made for sure. Johnny Bairstow cropped up in the interview there with Brendan McCullum. He's an issue. The bowlers, how many of the spinners feature in the years ahead? So there are lots of questions. Do they have to play smarter? Sure. You know, Baz-ball isn't a solution to Test cricket. It's not a finished product. It's an attempt to free up the players and make them play a more entertaining, productive brand of cricket, but they can improve for sure. Absolutely.
And Lawrence, on the wicketkeeper situation, on the Bairstow stuff, this team has been very loyal. Stokes and McCullum have kept faith even out in India with 14 players in the five Test matches. Do you foresee in the future that they'll stick with being loyal, or do you think the mistakes that have been made, England might go and make not household changes, but two or three changes where they go, well, instead of Folks or Bairstow, we'll leave them both out and we'll bring in a Robinson, a Smith, or a Jamie Smith from Surrey, Ollie Robinson from Durham, and James Rowe, probably the three names on the tip of my tongue, who potentially from Somerset, who potentially could take over that number seven spot and take the gloves.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when Harry Brooke comes back, and look, England missed him massively in India. Don't forget that. One of Bairstow or Folkes will have to go. But as you say, both could go because I think Ollie Robinson, not the fast bowler, but the wicketkeeper at Durham, who's been playing Baz-ball cricket for
Definitely.
fun last season and scored a couple of counter-attacking 80s for the England Lions against India A recently. I think he could be a natural selection. I think Folkes. You know, there was a lot of debate last summer, wasn't there, in the Ashes. Should it be Folkes or should it be Bairstow? Of course, the Folkes ultras got annoyed when Bairstow dropped a catch. They went a bit more quiet when Bairstow hammered that 99 at Old Trafford. You know, it went backwards and forwards, but neither of them made a great case for themselves in India. Bairstow kept getting into 20s and 30s. I think 7 of his 10 innings were 20 or 30. We didn't get to 40, and that's not what you want from a guy playing up to 100 Test matches. And Folkes kept brilliantly. I mean, no one talked about the wicket keeping, which was a sign of how well he kept, actually. But his strike rate was under 40, and you can say it's not all about strike rate. But there was that game where I think he scored a single and over for 12 overs, trying to protect the tail, and England went absolutely nowhere. And that is not the kind of cricket that McCullum and Stokes want. So they could both be out. It could be Brooke and Robinson in the first test against West Indies.
Lawrence, just on the ethos of the new approach, the new regime, the demystification of Test cricket, I mean, its status as the ultimate form of the game, some players have found inhibiting and intimidating. And that's why McCullum and Stokes talk so much about having fun, removing the fear of failure. And, you know, commentators like me saying, well, you just don't do that in a test match. You don't do that on the first morning of a test match. You just don't treat test matches like that. But I've loved the fact that they talk about making memories and playing with this freedom. But it's quite a hard sell when you lose 7 out of 12, isn't it?
You know, 7 out of 12 includes two against an extremely strong Australian side who, had it not rained at Manchester, would have become only the second team in Test history to lose after being 2-0 up. That would have been a great comeback by England. I mean, I prefer to focus on the fact that England fought back brilliantly in that series. I mean, previous England teams have been 2-0 down against Australia, would have lost 4 or 5-0. But McCullum said after they went 2-0 down at Lord's, 3-2 has a nice ring to it. There's outrageous stuff, really, that we're not used to hearing from England coaches. And he almost got it right. And losing in India, everyone loses in India. That's not news. No team has won in India for over a decade. So the fact that England got themselves into a shout in each game, to me, someone who's followed England for years, was progress. They lost 3-1 in India last time when, okay, they got a good win in the first test when Root batted like a god and India slaughtered them after that. They lost 4-0 in the previous series. They didn't get close in any game. Rajkot had a better of the draw. That was it. This game, that you could see India were a bit spooked. You know, Ben Duckett got his 150 in the second test. Root batted beautifully. They had a first innings lead in the third test, I think third or fourth. There were moments there where India had to play out of their skins to hammer them. So, look, I'm looking at the overall picture. I'm thinking since Stokes and McCullum came together, they've won 14 and lost 8. And they've drawn one, and that one would probably have been a victory had it not rained. One of the defeats was by one run. One of the defeats was by 2 wickets. Prior to that, they'd won 1 out of 17. They've scored a run quicker than any other team in Test cricket. Only India and Australia have a better win-loss ratio in that time. We've got to look at the bigger picture here. You know, India and Australia are damn good sides. And England are playing with, look at the spin attack they took to India. I mean, that was kindergarten stuff, wasn't it, really, once Leach got injured. You're looking at Shoaib Bashir, who's got 10 wickets at 60, goodness sake, gets picked and bowls beautifully, takes 2 fifers, looks like a guy for the future. Hartley ends up with only Ravi Ashwin takes more wickets than him in the series. And he goes for fewer runs and over than both Ashwin and Jadeja. I mean, these are ludicrous things that would never have happened under a previous regime. So look, I hear the results. They're not great. They are not. But I will not be convinced by anyone who says that it's the same old England, because it certainly is not.
Yeah, I agree with that. I 100% agree with that. And I keep on saying that, you know, the little bit of refined, a little bit of smartness, play better on the tougher conditions. And does that, Lawrence, give you the confidence? Because, you know, we talked about the results against Australia, then against India. In the next 18 months, we've got them again, but the opposite way around. We go in to Australia. We're playing India at home in 5 test matches each time. Do you feel as though this, you know, the McCullum and Stokes over the next probably 6 to 8 months with the summer, because the summer series will be an interesting one because they're playing against nobody really. Do they then, you know, reaffirm their where they're playing, but also try and make some little tinkers to make sure that when they go to Australia, when they come, when do you come here, we are in a much better mental place, or, you know, situation place when it comes to the tougher moments in the game?
Yeah, I think they have to get better at looking at those moments. I mean, India grabbed all the big moments, didn't they, after Hyderabad? But look, England, I don't quite buy the fact that England have got no one before those two. I mean, this winter, they're going to Pakistan and New Zealand. I don't expect them to repeat the 3-0. That was in Pakistan. That was quite a freakishly good result for England. And that had never, no team had ever done that before. And New Zealand are tough. I mean, they probably should have won that test against Australia overnight in Christchurch. And that would have kept their unbeaten run at home for 7 years. You know, England found out last time how tough they are. So those two are going to be tough series. They should beat West Indies and Sri Lanka at home. I think they'll beat India at home next summer, just because India are a different side on seeming tracks. And then England's only hope of getting any kind of result in Australia in a couple of winters' time is to keep playing baseball. They've got to stick to it. That is absolutely their only hope. And Australia will have been slightly spooked by what happened last summer. They deny it completely. They bang on about the ball change at the Oval. They ignore the fact it rained at Manchester. They ignore the fact they were a bit lucky at Edgbaston, let's face it. They needed 55 to win with 2 wickets left, which is a situation from which you generally lose a match. They outplayed England at Lord's. But no one would have complained if England had won that series. So I think Australia, England have got to keep going at it. And that's why Stokes and McCullum, they sound stubborn sometimes. And people think they're not learning. They are taking everything, and they're smart guys, and they want
definitely.
To. I don't buy this stuff about they just want to entertain. That is it's not a smokescreen, but it's an attempt to free the players up from the burden of success and failure. And they will be doing everything they can to be playing this brand of cricket by the time they go to Australia in less than 2 years' time.
Lawrence, it's been such a pleasure. I wish we could get you on more often. But congratulations on another edition of The Almanac. We'll no doubt have you on when you're doing your media rounds once it hits the bookshelves. And we'll have our 5 minutes of your 14 hours of media that you always do. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Cheers, Lawrence.
Thanks, man.
The wonderful Lawrence Booth, Wisden Almanac editor and Daily Mail cricket writer. You're listening to Following On here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, alongside former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. And next up, TalkSport's cricket editor John Norman joins us for his weekly debate as we look back on New Zealand's 2-0 series defeat to Australia.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
You're listening to Following On here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorp, alongside former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. And if you have missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can always download the podcast from the Following On feed, now available, as always, via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. The boss has joined us again. It's cricket editor John Norman to chat about his second favourite team, a country that he's very close to and has spent a lot of time in, New Zealand. Disappointing everybody again, no more than themselves. Losing to Australia, going down 2-0 in a series that so many Black Cap supporters had high hopes for. And they really, having thrown away a couple of opportunities in the first test match, they then had Australia 34 for 4, needing 281. And they lost again. Alex Carey made an unbeaten 98, was absolutely brilliant. And there were runs as well for Mitchell Marsh. John, so disappointing. And, you know, I mean, I think almost everybody in England's second favourite team is New Zealand, and especially when they're playing against Australia. What is it that I mean, they haven't won for 35 years or something against Australia in New Zealand. Why do they always underperform against their big neighbours?
I mean, if I knew that, then, you know, I probably wouldn't be sitting here talking to you. But what I do believe is that the disappointment is, you know, etched on your face, and I'm sure the listeners can hear it in the voice. There's obviously a disappointment in New Zealand as well, but actually there's something, and it's quite interesting how different countries cover the same sport. Could you imagine the reaction in India? And I know there are geopolitical reasons why there would be a little bit more angst if India was to lose to Pakistan, not they ever play each other. But similarly, there was a lot of anger when England lost to Australia. And yet all we hear is disappointment. Speaking to some of the journalists out there, I don't think the rage and shame that is actually felt in that country is at all represented by the media that they have out there. And there is a real disconnect within the feeling in New Zealand, which goes well beyond disappointment, and what is actually described and written about. The New Zealand players should be, or maybe not should be, in another country, those New Zealand players would be getting, and the coaching staff would be getting, absolutely slammed for that performance. Not just in Christchurch, where they threw away a golden opportunity, but in Wellington, where they threw away about four. That if we'd had Daniel McCarty on, I would have asked him, Daniel, What was the worst bit of that first innings or that first test defeat? Was it the fact that you picked the wrong side for the second test in a row? The fact that you retired Neil Wagner before the series, despite the fact he had a great record against Steve Smith? The fact that you picked Scott Kugelein? The fact that you didn't pick Mitchell Santner? Or the fact that you essentially let Australia off the hook with poor bowling, poor captaincy, poor fielding, and poor batting? And yet, if I was to look at the media in New Zealand, I wouldn't see any of that. So why is that?
Well, you mentioned the captaincy, John. I'm thinking about that. I'm thinking about it. I think mostly it's because there aren't any full-time cricket media in New Zealand.
Exactly. Exactly. It's not covered full time, is it?
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean,
but I tell you what, I know you want to throw to the Tim Southee audio, but I would rather you threw to the Daryl Mitchell audio.
All right.
Because if there was ever going to be former players or journalists coming in on their long run-up, they certainly did when they heard what Daryl Mitchell had to say.
We've always said as Black Caps, we're not defined by the outcomes, we're defined by how we play cricket and hopefully how we inspire our country to play the game. And really proud of the efforts that we did throughout the test, although we didn't get the win that we wanted. I think if we keep turning up and keep playing cricket like this, with puffing our chests out and doing it with a smile on our face and hopefully inspiring many young kids here in New Zealand to play test cricket in the future, then we're doing the right thing.
Well, that was Daryl Mitchell sounding like Jeetan Patel manners, wasn't it? You see where Jeetan Patel gets it from, the New Zealander who New Zealand off-spin coach for England comes out and after England has a shocker and talks as positively as he possibly can. But John, surely I know New Zealand cricket has I've got some fantastic players, but is it as simple as this is all we've got? So we talk up the note. There's no real accountability because you can say they didn't have the right team or some of the their best players, but is this what they've got? And they're happy with their lot. And that's why they'll always be happy New Zealand, comfortable semi-finalists, happy beaten finalists. And will that ever change?
No, they're not happy at all. This is the point I'm making. Yeah. You know, when I made my way out to New Zealand in 2019, England were playing a test series out there before the Ashes, I think. Maybe they weren't. Either way, it was 2019 and I was out there. I'm fast losing track. And I struggled to communicate the depth of the despair that New Zealand felt after losing against England in the Cricket World Cup final. They were on the floor. This was in the same year that they lost to England in the Rugby World Cup. I think England knocked them out of that as well. They weren't actually as bothered about that. And this is the problem. They're not all happy-go-lucky New Zealanders who have such an amazing life down on the farm. They're incandescent with rage. And it's not portrayed anywhere. They're not being represented. There's going to be, I mean, they do have proportional representation. So maybe if they set up their own political party, they'd probably get, four or five seats in their relevant houses of parliament. So, and also, they do have the players. Mitchell Santner, he could have played. Neil Wagner could have played. Glenn Phillips could have bowled more than one over before lunch yesterday as well. There's so many decisions. But at the end of the day, Harmy, as someone who has led their life through the old adage of law of averages, because I've watched enough sport in my time to know that eventually, if you keep doing the right things, something good will come of it. I then look at New Zealand's record in cricket against Australia over the last 40 years and think, hang on, maybe I should have been basing all my life on the law of averages after all.
Right. Tim Southee has had a really disappointing summer with overall figures of 4 for 245 against Australia and 2 for 183 in those two tests against South Africa's C team. And it was a surprise to many when he took over the captaincy when Kane Williamson relinquished it. And unsurprisingly, he's not sure how long that he'll retain the job.
I've only been in the job a short time. This obviously disappointed to finish the a test block like this. It's always easier when you finish a block on a win. And we've got an exciting winter, a tough winter away in Asia, and then we come back here and we've got a few tests against England. So plenty of test cricket this year for us, which is exciting. And we're looking forward to that challenge. But obviously you go to Asia, the makeup of the side changes slightly with obviously spin becoming the main threat in that part of the world. But yeah, we'll see when we get there. We'll deal with this tonight, and then like I say, look to move forward to what's to come later.
John, he said that he's not been in the job long, and he hasn't, and it doesn't sound like he'll be in it much longer. But there's a number of New Zealand players in their 30s, aren't there? And they've been very good at transitioning and rebuilding the side. But they're going to have quite a few younger, newer, fresher faces coming in, aren't they?
Yeah, for sure. I think if there was something to take away from this series and the one that preceded it was the fact that, you know, a Rook looks like he's got something about him. Sears looks like he's got something about him. You've still got a couple of years left from Henry. Hopefully Jameson has still got a few years, but his injury problems are obviously, you know, well documented. So the bowling looks in a decent place. I mean, they've got to keep hold of them once they've got them. What a difference Trent Bolt would have made. The fact that we're not even talking about him anymore says plenty, because we certainly were this time last year when England were in town. So that's the end of Trent Bolt's test career. Conway's still to come back. Latham, I think, has still got a few years. Williamson, too. And Daryl Mitchell, as well as, of course, Glenn Phillips coming through. So they've got the bedrock of a team. I think the point that was made in some of the press was that, you know, New Zealand aren't scheduled to play Australia in tests again. Of course, they will, but the schedule only goes up to 2027. So at least 3 or 4 years at home. They do go to Australia at the end of 26, 27. Hopefully that series goes a little bit better than the last time New Zealand went there. But, you know, what players will still be there for them? We shall just wait and see. But this was a huge opportunity for New Zealand. Huge, because this is not a stellar Australia side. It's a little bit of a knackered Australia side. They played a lot of test cricket. It's an Australia side without a settled batting lineup. And at the end of the day, New Zealand had an opportunity and they absolutely blew it.
Final word, Harmy. Do you think New Zealand have finally got over the didn't they do well for a small country syndrome?
I think they're trying. Didn't sound like that from Daryl Mitchell, but they're trying. Where the next leader is, I think that then, their next captain has to make them, like Ben Stokes, has to make them this, you know, a machine which is get over that sort of happy New Zealand tag. I think that next leader is important. Yeah, Southee and Williamson have come from the McCullum. Now they need somebody, I think, to stand there with a little bit more steel and determination.
A hard man. Harmy's saying they need a hard man. Who's the hard man?
Is it Conway? Is it Latham's already been? Has Latham gone to it? Do they go all the way and go, well, let's put Ravindra in charge and say, right, it's yours for the next 5 to 10 years, Benham, and he probably will lose a lot of cricket through franchise stuff. You know, is there a captain out there that can really grab a hold of this team and say, right, we're going in this direction. This is hard-nosed, hard-faced, and this is how we're going to play our cricket, and we're going to take everybody on.
Well, if they'd picked Mitchell Santner, he already leads in white ball cricket at times, doesn't he? So maybe he would have, especially with the amount of cricket that's going to be played in Asia. But yeah, it's a good point, Harmy. I'm not sure that there is an obvious leader there across all three formats, but specifically in the test arena, I think they probably maybe have to look at the coach as well.
And that was the boss, John Norman, and hopefully he'll be back next week for another feature. You're listening to Following On with me, Neil Manthorpe, alongside the former number one bowler in the world, Steve Harmison.
And a reminder, you can now watch us on YouTube. Just head over to the TalkSport Cricket YouTube channel and subscribe. Now, last Friday marked the International Women's Day. And to celebrate that, TalkSport's Scott Taylor spoke with England internationals Tammy Beaumont and Chris Wokes to discuss the importance of the day and the rise of women's cricket.
So, Tammy, Chris, thanks for joining us. We're here on International Women's Day. Of course, Tammy, we'll start off with you. Just how important is this day for you?
Yeah, I think it's massive. I think actually a few years ago, I kind of struggled to see potentially the importance of it. But actually, the more you kind of realise how important it is and kind of how far potentially women have got to go to gain equality, actually, it's massive to have a day of recognition. And also, you know, look at how far we've come, particularly in a sporting context. I think getting that day to kind of reflect on the journey that you've kind of been on, but also kind of keep seeing what's next to conquer, really.
Yeah, and Chris, as a father of two girls yourself, how important is it that them growing up now, they have that visibility to be the next Tammy Beaumont, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you hit the nail on the head, really, the fact that they've got that. You know, you've got something to look towards and inspire to. Tammy obviously is a key figure in that. You know, the girls and the women's team have done some fantastic things over the recent years, not just to promote the game, but to obviously, you know, to perform the way they have as well within their international game has been fantastic. So, yeah, as you touch on, yeah, to be the father of two girls, it'd be, you know, I'd be delighted if they were to take up the game. You know, it'd be a, you know, really, that's a proud moment for me. But obviously, at the same time, the girls are doing a fantastic job at the minute to make sure the game's in the best place possible for these younger girls growing up to hopefully come into the game.
And Tammy, we're speaking with Chris here, who's a current men's international cricketer. How important is it to have someone like Chris's profile publicly supporting the women's game and championing it?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely massive to have someone like Chris as an ally to the women's game, and really kind of being outspoken about that, I think is brilliant. And I think it's actually kind of the last few years, the way things have been, particularly with the 100 or the way things have been marketed, I think it's kind of brought the two games a lot closer together, and there's a lot more kind of bouncing back and forwards. And actually, it just feels like cricket. It doesn't feel like you have to label it as men's or women's. Like, obviously, it always has that label, but actually, there's so much more conversation going on around all of it. And I think it's just great to have voices, not just women's voices, kind of championing that.
And we've seen in the 100, actually, the Manchester Originals had it last year, where they had both the men's and the women's side spend a lot of time together. So it is, as you say, that united front. Is that something you experienced with Welsh Fire, or is that something maybe you're looking to do in this 100, for example?
Yeah, I think it's certainly something we did this year. I think in previous years, potentially haven't. But I think the Fire in particular seems like quite a family vibe. A lot of the lads had their wives or girlfriends down. We've got a couple of kids from a couple of our players, and just a real kind of family vibe. We even have a couple of dogs that come along. My dog comes along. So it's an absolute massive family vibe. A lot of kind of social time spent together. I think a lot of the time, because a lot aren't from Cardiff themselves, it does become a bit of a hub, our team hotel. And yeah, we turn it a bit red and try and just get everyone involved, really, which is great.
And Chris, for you, we're speaking here ahead of the joint series against Pakistan in May. Is there any plans in place for the men's to go watch the women's team, and then maybe Tammy for you, vice versa? We'll start off with you, Chris.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know exact plans as of now, but I think there should definitely be something like that put in place. I think, as you said, for the fact that the series is being played, you know, effectively alongside each other, align the series, I think is really important. And I think, as Tammy said, I think the two teams, both the men and the women, it's never been as close as it is now. I think there's a lot of talk between the players at venues, as you said, around the 100 games, and it's brought the two games together. And effectively, that game now is effectively one, which is the way it should be. And hopefully, that's only going to develop moving forward. So hopefully, there is something where, you know, the two teams can get to see each other play. And I think that's why these series are put together and have been developed the way they are, is to try and, I suppose, promote that as much as possible and get people watching England cricket as a whole, not just the men and the women.
And for you, Tammy?
Yes, I certainly hope so. I know we made an effort to come down to Edgbaston for the Ashes test, and we've obviously got a game at Edgbaston this time, so Wokesy's only down the road, so that should be the one he comes to.
Absolutely.
So we've also seen the ECB last summer introduce equal match fees for both the men's and the women's side. Aside from the money itself, just how important is that, Tammy, for you, that it's more about equality, isn't it, and equal fitting as opposed to the money itself?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the big thing, isn't it? It's about equality. And for me, I don't think equality necessarily means absolutely equal pay yet. I think it's kind of a scale of what revenue you bring in and that type of thing. And but actually, for me, it's the equal opportunity. I think that's the big one that absolutely every single one of my teammates want. It's, you know, we want to play at the big venues, we want to play in prime time you know, days of the week and time slots, which we had for the Ashes last year, and exactly the same for this Pakistan series, kind of making sure that we didn't clash with the men's Ashes test. We kind of play the day after, or T20s were 7 o'clock at night, making sure that, you know, we had a prime slot and the men had a prime slot and we weren't clashing. And that kind of, to me, is how we start to get equality, because then we're actually, you know, if we're 2 o'clock on a Tuesday outside of school holidays, no one's coming. So you can never sell the game. Whereas now we're starting to sell the game. You know, we've already got record ticket sales for this summer, already ahead of last year. And, you know, it was an Ashes summer, which is massive. So for me, I think that the equal kind of financial rewards will kind of get there because of getting equal opportunity first, if that makes any sense whatsoever.
Yeah, it does. And Chris, for you, you did some punditry, you worked for the 100. You saw the crowds at the women's game. Just how refreshing was that to turn up to the big grounds and see the attendances last year, especially, and as Tammy said, even more this year coming up?
Yeah, amazing, really. Like you say, I think that's the one real benefit and positive that has come out of the 100. I was obviously seeing, you know, big crowds at women's games, and you know, I think Tammy just touched on it there. I'm biased to Edgbaston, but whenever we got down there, there was a great crowd for both the men and the women, really supporting the teams. And I think Tammy's hit the nail on the head. I think playing in the big venues is really, you know, important moving forward. I think they should obviously get the opportunity to play at these venues, but also I think that inspires young girls and young boys to go and watch and to see their role models playing in these, you know, amazing test venues that have so much history and, you know, people have seen for many years. I think having that opportunity is huge, and I think we're moving in the right direction with that. But as you touched on, you know, at the start of the question, the 100 has been an absolute revelation for both the men and the women's game, I believe, and has certainly pushed it in the right direction.
And we've seen the women's side have the appearance at the Commonwealth Games. We've got cricket at the Olympics being touted as well. So, Tammy, is it more a case of there is no ceiling for the women's game? You're starting to have spin camps, pace bowling camps and that sort of stuff. So the development of the women's game has been huge recently.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, it's how quickly the game is growing and accelerating rapidly. I think the standard just seems to go up every single series you play, no matter who you're playing against. Everyone's hitting further boundaries, bowling faster, fielding better. I think that's just because of the professionalism of the game. And yeah, it's kind of great to see how far it could go with the likes of things in the Commonwealth Games, Olympics, just getting that game to a wider audience. Yeah, it's a really exciting time to be part of the game. And yeah, I think, you know, the sky's the limit, really.
And obviously the English summer starts off with that Pakistan series, but there's two T20 World Cups this year. There's one in Bangladesh for the women's, one's in the West Indies and USA for the men's as well. So we'll start off with you, Tammy. How excited are you for 2024 as a whole?
Yeah, it's a massive year for us. We've got pretty much back-to-back cricket from sort of now until in December time when I think we've got a test match in South Africa for the first time in years and years. So it's a really exciting year, and yeah, hopefully be part of that T20 in Bangladesh. I think it would be a great tournament to go to, and probably one of the most high standards women's tournaments so far. So yeah, it's a really exciting time to be part of this England team.
And Chris, for you, you're obviously missing the India series that's going on at the minute, but staying fresh ahead of the IPL and then the T20 World Cup later in the year.
Yeah, there's some real busy cricket. I mean, there's always a schedule to work towards, isn't there? It seems to be packed all the time nowadays. So yeah, a nice little breather at home before what, you know, is going to be a busy IPL, and then hopefully into a World Cup in the West Indies and the States, as you mentioned. You know, there's always feels like there's a big tournament or a big series around the corner nowadays. So yeah, exciting year ahead, and you know, fingers crossed it can be a really rewarding one for both the men and the women.
And Tammy, just finally, looking ahead then, do you think we will see a time, or when do you think we'll see the time that, for example, Sue Redfern's just become the first women's umpire to manage in a men's international? When do you think will be the time we stop saying the first women and it just considered as the norm, really, that this is an equal sport for everyone?
I don't think it'll be long. I think, you know, the fact that, you know, people are being the first, I think you see in the Rugby Six Nations now, I don't think it's unusual to see a Lions person be a woman. I mean, you're seeing it in football more and more. I think it's great, really. I think it'll probably be a couple of years and it'll just be the norm to see any sex or gender officiating in any kind of sport.
And that was England internationals Tammy Beaumont and Chris Wokes speaking to TalkSport's Scott Taylor, who produces our show as well. Yeah, to celebrate International Women's Day and to look ahead to the joint series against Pakistan in May. We're on to the final word, Harmy, and I'm going to give you a choice of three today. First of all, Maria Rasmus retiring from umpiring after 82 tests, 124 ODIs and 43 T20s and 18 women's ODIs, a very, very popular figure, a real commanding presence who never imposed himself upon the players and never had to. So that's your first choice. Second choice is Sri Lanka celebrating their ODI series win against Bangladesh by posing for a team photograph with all of them pointing towards their watches. Or imaginary watches after Angelo Matthews' controversial timed out dismissal against those opponents at the World Cup. And choice number three goes to Mamadou Riaz. During that series, he became the first man in the history of the game. Just when you thought that all the firsts were taken, the first man ever to become the third player in a hat trick in all three formats. He was the hat-trick man in tests and ODIs and now in T20Is. Amazing.
Well, that one's got to win, to be honest, is the choice, because you know, you've got to be some batter if you are the third person in all three formats to be a hat-tricked. But yeah, I thought Angelo Matthews was hilarious. And Maria Rasmus, for somebody who stands there, very stone-faced, doesn't say a great deal, has a brilliant sense of humour. He really has. So congratulations to Maria Rasmus, because he's a wonderful man, fantastic umpire. But he stands there, he looks as though he's not interested. You know, doesn't say a great deal verbally when you see him talking to players. He doesn't give a great deal away. But while we were in India, I had two or three Q&As with him, and what a funny, funny man and a really passionate golfer. So I'm sure he's going to enjoy some time on the golf course. And so he should. He's been a wonderful servant to world cricket as a man in the middle.
When he started his playing career for Boland in South Africa, he was still a primary school teacher. Life has provided him with unimagined riches. And he deserves them. Good on him. As you say, he's a terrific bloke. You've been listening to Following On here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, along with former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. And if you missed any of the show or you want to catch up, you can download the podcast, as always, from the Following On feed, available via the free TalkSport app. We'll be back next week as we build up to the start of the 2024 county season. Can you believe it? Less than a month away, or just over a month away. But for now, this has been Following On.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.